There is this song, I don't know if you know this song, but it was definitely a song, and I just think of the hypnosis and the programming, because this was a song I remember hearing when I was a kid, and it stuck with me. It's so catchy. It was a man and a woman duet, and the song goes like this. Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. And then the man or the woman would come back and say anything, you know, and they'd like just say that back and forth to each other. And it's kind of a funny comedic song rendition. But like now thinking about it, I'm like, man, this is just so toxic.
It is.
Because it's pitting men against women. And we're not meant to be pitted against each other. We're meant to be united together.
Welcome to the Weekly Transit, a podcast exploring the intersection of Western astrology and Jungian psychology. Astrology is a language that communicates how the planets and stars influence life on Earth, while psychology helps us navigate both conscious and unconscious experiences. Together, these tools offer the potential for self-understanding, growth, and transformation. Join astrologer Scott Tajarian and me, psychotherapist Gabriella D'Urso, as we dive into the cosmic forecast each week.
Welcome to the Weekly Transit. This is the week of March 25th to the 31st. Hi, Gabriella.
Hey, Scott.
Let's get right into it, because literally at midnight on March 21st, midnight Pacific time, so 3 a.m. Eastern time, is the full moon lunar eclipse in Libra, the cardinal air sign symbolized by the scales representing balance, harmony, equanimity, fairness. This is something that this energy is going to be building from Sunday into Monday. So Sunday night, Monday in the morning, through the night. Big release.
Can you explain what the lunar eclipse means for those who might not know?
Lunar eclipse it's this phenomenon that happens where the Earth moves in between the moon and the sun. When we see a full moon, it's full because it is fully reflecting the light of the sun. So the sun is directly opposite the moon. The Earth gets in the way of that opposition and blacks out the moon. In terms of the esoteric meaning of the lunar eclipse, it's a time for deep cleansing, releasing. The full moon is always a release. But when the Earth gets in between the sun and the moon, that release feels more palpable, more powerful. It's like you can literally see the effect that maybe the Earth has on the moon and the sun, just as the moon and the sun have an effect on the Earth.
Right.
It's blacking out the moon. So you don't see that from everywhere on planet Earth. There's only specific places on planet Earth where the moon will be completely blacked out.
Right. Where the obstruction is visible.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Interesting.
Yes.
So you're saying that the experience of the Earth transiting between the sun and the moon is amplifying our experience of the full moon, of the release.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to consider, too, how it might be adding to maybe the conflict of sort of the tension of opposites.
Yes.
Because the Earth is in that sort of path, that energetic path between the sun and the moon. And we've talked several times on this podcast about the tension of the opposites and how our default mode is often black and white thinking and sort of seeing the world through a binary. One of those binary perspectives is that we have the sun and the moon. We have daytime, we have nighttime, we have the conscious, we have the unconscious. So I'm wondering what else this might be providing symbolically for us. I wonder if part of what maybe we're letting go of is the tension of the binary itself. By getting in its path so that we can really feel the tension, there's an opportunity to release some of that.
So what you're saying is, would this be like kind of your stepping in the middle of two people fighting? It's like getting in the middle of a fight. If in maybe you get hit where one person is trying to hit another person, but you try to break it up and you end up getting hit too. You feel that tension between the two energies even more intensely.
Yes, I'm not sure that I think of it necessarily as a fight per se, but two opposing energies. Like maybe an analogy that's coming to mind would be like the color wheel, how you have opposite colors. On the color wheel, colors that are opposite one another are energetically opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put something in the middle, what you get in the middle is actually where the colors overlap and create something new. There's sort of a third color that's created.
So what you're saying is like when yellow and blue make green.
Yeah, that's a good example. I like using the colors because there's no sort of value judgment about which color is better. And I also don't necessarily see the sun and moon as in conflict with one another. So I would say this is giving us access to that third thing, like whatever is created in the overlap of the two energies is a third energy. And this is a concept too in Jungian psychology. They say that in order to transform, that you have to hold the tension of the opposites. And when you do that, a third way emerges. You can also think of this too, if you did have two people who were having an argument, like you were saying, you know, there's this expression like there's one person's version of the truth, the second person's version of the truth, and then there's the truth itself, which is the third thing.
Yes.
That the truth is typically a representation of sort of where those energies overlap. So I think this is giving us an opportunity to, in some ways, amplify the tension of the opposites, but also provide us with an experience of that third thing, that new way of being. So in this example, it would be access to the color green that we might not normally have access to.
Right.
So whatever that means symbolically.
Right.
And maybe you can tell us what that might indicate symbolically.
Astrologically.
Yes. Right.
Energetically with the planets. And what are these planets? Where are they? What does that mean? What is the third thing that's going to be created here?
Yeah. Based on where the sun is, where the moon is. And then how would you interpret that astrologically?
Yes. Well, I think of it in terms of what are these opposites? The opposites are the sun is in Aries. Aries is cardinal fire. It's ruled by Mars, the god of war. The sun is exalted in Aries. It's in a position of power, a position of strength. The moon transiting through Libra. Libra is also cardinal. Like Aries, that's why they're opposite each other, because whatever the modality is, it's opposite the same modality. But the opposite is not just the 180 degrees apart from each other. It's also the air energy different from fire energy. And that's Libra is cardinal air. Libra is ruled by Venus, the goddess of love. So you have the sign where the sun is, which is ruled by the god of war, Aries, and the sign where the moon is, which is ruled by the goddess of love, which is Libra, Venus, Mars versus Venus. So this is, when you think about the full moon in Libra, first and foremost, without the eclipse. Libra, the Libra full moon is about releasing any tendencies or habitual patterns, frequencies that are rooted in your childhood or your ancestry that are no longer serving you. Think about your relationships and how you behave in your relationships, how you are as a partner, the people that you partner with. The moon represents the past. So we're looking at the past of our relationships, how we've conducted ourselves in relationships since our very first relationship, which was with the ones who raised us. And then even beyond that, who raised them? Because whoever raised them taught them how to be, which then they taught you how to be. So as you grow into adulthood and you have a lot of different relationships, friends, lovers, business partners, and you start to notice patterns which are attributed to the habits that were formed in your upbringing. But now you look and you say, is that me? That's where the Aries energy comes in. Who am I in my relationships? Am I confident in who I am in my relationships? Can I be authentic in my relationships? If you're not authentic in your relationships, if you're not confident in your relationships, then what would you like to change? What would you like to let go of? What would you like to release? So then you bring the eclipse energy in, and thinking about that third piece that you mentioned. What would that third piece be in the dynamic of relationships versus self and who I am as an individual and who I am as a partner?
Well, I think in this example that you're giving, the true, like based on the astrological signs and the placements, I think that middle ground would be letting yourself have some influence of the past, to your point, that is within us, the ancestral piece, all the way up to literally how we were raised by our parents. So that letting that color us in some way, but not 100%. So not letting it be a crutch.
Right. How do you, it's already colored in that way.
Right.
But how do you change the color, erase the color, say like, I don't, or you're saying that well,
what if that's the yellow, for example, and then the blue. So if that Libra moon energy is yellow, for example, and the Aries energy is blue, and we're trying, and we know that we're meant to orient towards the green, which is both, which is its own way forward, then I think this would be about the integration of the past with the present, like not letting the past completely dictate the way forward, and also not letting the present completely dictate the way forward, because we are a combination of the past and the present.
Yes.
In terms of moving forward into the future. So it sounds to me like this is about the integration of those two parts.
The integration of the past and the present.
The integration of the past and the present as the way forward. And by acknowledging both of them, we're acknowledging more of like the totality of our experiences. Instead of, you know, a more sort of linear perspective would be that the past completely dictates the present, which then completely dictates the future. That would be a linear, kind of a three-dimensional perspective, right?
Okay.
But I think what we're saying is that the past and the present, when you merge them together, actually can provide the way forward for the future. So directionally, if you think about the tension of the opposites, like think about them on the color wheel, and then it's the way forward is in the center.
Yes.
Versus them all being on a line heading in the same direction. So like thinking about them as points on a circle instead of on a straight line is maybe a good visual.
And they're all moving towards the center. It's not dragging the past forward, and it's not the past dragging you back.
It's the recognition of, and this is I don't think this is something we fully understand, but we have a tendency to think that time is linear, that it is only moving in one direction on a straight line. But I think what we're moving towards is an awareness that there's more to it than that. So that's why maybe
the past is present. The past does have something to do with here. It's not just in the past. It's also affecting your present moment. And you can even affect the past in the way that you look at the past.
Yes.
You can look at the past from a different perspective than you had before.
Yes.
And so you can change the past. You can change your perspective of the past.
Yes. Yes, the past is not this concrete, like immovable piece of information. Because we know in the brain how we store memories. We have access to change neural pathways in the brain. So we can change our association with memories from the past and create a new way of seeing them, a new way of moving forward.
So you look at the past from a different perspective and it changes the way it changes the present.
It does. And I think by thinking of it in a circle, like you're moving towards, a circle is an image of wholeness, which is ultimately the goal of Jungian psychology, of this process of integrating the conscious with the unconscious, is that you end up with one sort of shared understanding of yourself, and that is wholeness. So I think that's why the image of the circle is coming up strongly for me to share, because it's truly the integration of all of these different parts. And in this particular transit, we're relating to this tension of the opposites, specifically with Libra and with Aries. But every time we have a full moon, we're experiencing this tension that you're describing through opposite signs.
Yes.
So it happens to be amplified this time because of the eclipse. But I think if you imagine this circle, every time we have a full moon, we're integrating the opposites of whatever those signs represent. And so that point in the center, that representation of wholeness, becomes sort of bigger and bigger each time we're able to find that overlap and sort of what is that third way of relating to that material.
I think the simplest way to think about it is with the moon in Libra, full, eclipsed, it's about making peace with the past, because Libra is the scales. Libra is symbolized by the scales, and the scales represent balance, harmony, equanimity, fairness, peace. So if you're able to make peace with your past, then you're able to be in the present more confidently. You're able to be more authentic in the way that you present yourself in the present. And maybe that's the third thing. The green is the rebirth of you. It's a new, wholly integrated version of you. Because if you make peace with your past, then you're not constantly lamenting the past and lamenting the present because, oh, this always happens to me. Because that's your story. This is what's happened to you your whole life. And so now it's happening again. But if you make peace with the past, then the present becomes something where you're not a victim to the past.
Exactly. I was thinking of that word victim too. It's a more empowered way of looking at your circumstances.
So that's the green. That's the third piece, so to speak, is when you've integrated the past, you've made peace with the past, and by making peace with the past, you're able to move forward more confidently, more courageously, more authentically from that place of self-love.
Right. And you're no longer living in the extremes of the binary, that you're either completely beholden to the past, or you have to completely abandon the past for what's happening right now. So you don't have to be in either of the extremes when you're able to integrate them.
Right. You're not beholden to the past, but you're not abandoning the past.
Right. So one other interpretation, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but when you were talking about Mars versus Venus is part of this tension that we're experiencing, I immediately thought of the masculine and the feminine. You know, there's that old school book, like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, which is, I don't know much about that book, but I remember seeing the title at one point and it really stuck with me.
Of course, it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's catchy.
Yeah, it's catchy. Exactly.
And there is maybe something to be said about the tension of the opposites between the masculine and the feminine. And I'm wondering if that's part of what this is about too. And it may be another interpretation of it.
Well, I love that you bring this up, because when I think of the masculine and the feminine, I think there's so many layers here. Because first of all, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. We were all born with Mars and Venus in our astrological code. So every woman has Mars energy and every man has Venus energy. So I just, even though that title is really catchy, I think it's kind of silly too, because it discounts the complexity of human beings, that we're not in this binary where men are from Mars, women are from Venus. No, it's not that simple. So there is masculine, feminine energy with each individual. But when you're thinking about male and female, what happens when a male and a female get together? They create a third.
Right.
They create a child. And that's a beautiful, wonderful blessing, to create a child. And so you think of that tension. I mean, it kind of sounds sexual to me, because that is one way to work out the tension. And sex can be very intense. And through sexual contact, there is a third created. Even if it's not a child, you have sex with somebody and there is something intimate that you shared with that person that cannot be recreated with anyone else.
Right. There's a merging of the energy.
Yes, right. Exactly. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's just where my mind drifted off to.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points, that we all have, men and women both have masculine and feminine energy. Mm-hmm. And I think we're still moving towards that understanding. I think maybe that's part of the binary in this point in time, is that men are providing the masculinity, women need to provide the femininity, and it's actually, we're both meant to do both. We're both oriented towards doing both.
Yes.
And you might have, depending on each individual's chart, a woman who is here to cultivate more of her masculine energy, or a man who's here to cultivate more of his feminine energy, depending on their charts.
Exactly.
So on an individual level, it is individualized depending on what's happening for each person. But on a collective level, I think there is tension between the masculine and the feminine.
Yeah, tell me more about that. Let's talk about that.
So I think one of the ways this has appeared is through the feminist movement.
Yes.
And the story behind the feminist movement is that women needed to participate in society in the same way that men were. And when you think about it, I think what that was really truly a call for was an orientation for men and women towards the feminine. But what it ended up doing is, from my perspective, and I know I'm not the only one who sees it this way, but I see it now as an attempt to make women more like men.
Yes.
But truly what we're working towards collectively is more of a balance between the feminine and the masculine, which in order to achieve that, is going to take an adjustment for both men and women.
Yes.
So it was never really about gender, but it was sold that way to us. And it put a lot of pressure on women to be out in the world working, but also be incredible mothers at home, to sort of do everything. And at the same time, I think it was difficult for men as well, because there was a sense of the feminist movement was almost in some way trying to make men obsolete.
Yes.
Like, we don't need you. We can do it all.
Very emasculating.
Very emasculating, which of course that isn't true.
Right.
We need men. We need everyone to be working on whatever they're here to work on so that we can move forward. But I think some of the binary we've been stuck in are these gender roles that, when it's not really about one gender doing one thing and the other doing another. So I'm wondering if part of this tension between the masculine and the feminine is helping us learn what that integration actually would look like or would feel like as a third way forward, so that we don't have to get stuck in this binary anymore.
Hopefully that's what it leads to. I mean, I think that in a sense, the feminist movement was sold as like balancing the scales. What they actually did was tip the scales even further to the masculine.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's now we have a society where in order for people to survive, both men and women have to work. So there is no time for children. There's no time to raise children. And then, you know, you give away your children basically to the state to raise your children through schools and activities. And, you know, you see your kids on the weekends maybe or at night. That is what has created society into this masculine form. Because the feminine is to be there for the child, whether it's the man or the woman, to be the nurturer.
Well, the feminine energy is the yin energy. Uh-huh. So to be in the position of receiving.
Yes.
Which the home is a yin expression. Yes. Versus...
the home isn't going out there.
Right.
You're coming into the home. The home is receiving you.
Right. So I just want to be clear that we're not criticizing anyone for any life choices that they've made.
Oh, no.
You made the point that we've really been forced into this situation just because of inflation, because of how expensive it is to be alive right now, that every adult in almost every household is out in the world, is out experiencing this yang sort of an energy, this masculine go out and provide energy, and it doesn't leave as much room for the feminine.
Exactly. I heard somebody say, I heard Dr. Phil say that 80%, and he was saying this in the context of he ended his show, which was on during the daytime, and he's creating his own network. He's going to rebrand his show, and his show is going to be on at night. And the reason why he wants to be on at night is because 80% of parents are working. So they're not at home watching his show, which is on during the day.
Right.
So
interesting.
That 80% of people that are adults are out there working, which is very masculine energy. It's not feminine.
But to your point, something shifted. And when the feminist movement was first encouraging women to go out and work, I think it was under sort of the guise of empowerment and equality. But at some point it changed and it just became a necessity.
Yep.
But then there were still the same expectations on women to also be providing that yin nurturing energy. And of course, the fathers are certainly part of that as well. Mm-hmm. So it really put a lot of stress and tension on both men and women, their ability to access that feminine part. Because in order to be receptive and to nurture, you have to have enough to give. Cancer rules the home. It also rules the stomach. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to be full. You have to have enough nourishment to share that with others,
and cancer
with the children.
Ruled by the moon. And we're talking about the moon.
And we're talking about...
This is when you look at the symbols of the moon and the sun is a circle with the smaller circle in the center. That is masculine, where the moon is the crescent receiving.
Right. I think most people would say that they feel depleted and don't have enough to give.
Exactly.
It is a disservice to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be really clear that I'm doing my best to look at this objectively. I'm not trying to pass judgment on anyone. I'm hoping that my intention is coming across clearly. But I think we're in a place now where we're confused about what is needed as we move forward. And like one example that's coming up for me is about maybe 5 years ago, there were these, at least in the Los Angeles area, these popular t-shirts that said the future is female.
Mm.
And I remember seeing them and feeling like as a woman, I should like this t-shirt. I should want to wear this t-shirt.
Mm.
And I didn't. And I felt really like kind of bristly about it. And I couldn't quite.
Well, how come?
Well, I'm not sure I could have articulated it at the time, but I want a t-shirt that says the future is the balance of the masculine and the feminine.
Mm.
I think that we're so oriented towards, like we've been talking about in this episode, the opposite extremes,
mm-hmm.
that we think there's been, you know, it's very vengeful too. It's like we think, oh, there's too much masculine energy. Now we need all the women to be in charge. But we really have to be careful not to swing the pendulum all the way to the other side.
Right.
Either.
And that's what's happened.
And that starts to feel competitive. It starts to feel vengeful to me, which to me are more masculine qualities. So it's kind of ironic. I feel like this image of the circle with this sense of wholeness in the center is really an image for us to keep in mind as we move forward, that it's time to integrate the masculine and the feminine and to stop being at odds with one another.
Totally. There is this song. I don't know if you know this song, but it was definitely a song, and I just think of the hypnosis and the programming, because this was a song I remember hearing when I was a kid, and it stuck with me. It's so catchy. It was a man and a woman duet, and the song goes like this. Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. And then the man or the woman would come back and say anything, you know, they'd like just say that back and forth to each other. And it's kind of a funny comedic song rendition. But like now thinking about it, I'm like, man, this is just so toxic.
It is.
Because it's pitting men against women. And we're not meant to be pitted against each other. We're meant to be united together.
Absolutely.
And there are feminine qualities that need to be celebrated in both genders. And there's masculine qualities that need to be celebrated in both genders. It's not a gender thing. Mm-hmm. It's an energetic thing. Men can be nurturing, loving, kind, caring, sensitive. Women can be courageous and authentic and tough and outspoken. But there has to be the space for both genders, all genders, to be both of those energies.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it doesn't mean that we're not saying that men need to work and women need to stay home by any means.
No, not at all.
Yeah, what if, I mean, like to share kind of our goal for our lifestyle is that you and I both work equally,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily full time,
right?
But have enough space for us both to have expressions of the masculine through our career,
uh-huh.
and then also to have time to be in that more receptive yin state. So maybe we don't have children in the mix, So we can't speak to what that would look like for us with children, but I think this has been a topic of discussion in relationship with us. That's how that dynamic has been in our relationship.
I think that's what part of this full moon is about, is finding that balance between masculine and feminine. When you talk about some of our goals in a relationship with each other, it also makes me think about the work week.
Yeah.
The work week. There was the Industrial Revolution, which that was another revolution that was occurring the last time that Pluto was in Aquarius, the god of death transforming society. You know, before the Industrial Revolution, was there a Monday through Friday work week? Was there a, you know, 40 hours, 60 hours, what's overtime? You know, in the beginning, there was no provisions for children. Children could work 60 hours a week. But then they started to put in parameters there. So, you know, you can't be 12 years old working a 60-hour work week. But does that make sense moving forward, the way that people work? You know, when you think about what is a good work-life balance? Masculine, work, feminine, home. What is that balance? Do we need to be working as much as we're working? What is driving that? Corporations and business, all masculine sort of energies.
Well, and what's driving it too is that it's just so expensive to be alive right now.
And that's business.
Which is business.
And government, which are all masculine sort of entities.
Right. So there's only so much in this moment we can do about that situation. I think we need to orient towards the consciousness piece of how we would like for that to be moving forward.
That's what's important, because when you're thinking about the Aquarius energy, what are the changes that you want to see in society? Like when I think of the 7 days, like so many people don't even know that these 7 days are named for the planets. They don't teach you that in school. When you're in kindergarten and you're learning the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s, like you would think the most basic thing to teach a child is that Monday is named for the moon. Sunday is named for the sun. But these are just arbitrary names that's how it's presented to people. It's just Sunday because it's always been Sunday. People don't even think that, oh, sun, day.
Right.
Saturn day.
Right.
Shouldn't we be adhering to the frequencies of the planets and the stars and the way that, like, this is the energy, and we're fighting against the energy when Saturday night is the night when people go out and party, when that's the day of work and responsibility? Doesn't really make sense. It's incongruent with the energy.
Right. Well, and it also doesn't make sense that we celebrate the new year on January 1st either.
Exactly.
When the new year is the start of Aries season.
Yes. Yes.
So we're being kind of set up for
failure.
For being out of alignment.
Out of alignment.
Yeah, with the rhythms of the natural world.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially interesting that Monday is moon day. Mm-hmm. The moon rules the emotions. Mm-hmm. And how many people are are moody on Mondays?
Exactly. Because that's not a day where you should be at work.
Yeah.
That's a day where you should be home, resting with family and loved ones.
So based on what you know about the days of the week and the planets, what are the days where we should be working?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Those are days, you know. Tuesday is named for Tur. Tur is the old Norse god, which is the equivalent of the Roman god Mars. So when you look at the Spanish language, like, this is not just unique to English. Spanish is Martes. Martes is named for Marta, which is Mars. So that is the go day, the day of let's get up, let's go, let's do something.
And that is that Aries energy. Yes. Mars rules Aries. So yes, that makes sense.
Exactly. Wednesday is named for Woden. Woden is the Old Norse god that is the equivalent of the Roman god Mercury. When you look at the Spanish language, what is Wednesday? Miércoles. What is Mercury? Mercurio. So it's the day of Mercury. So you act on Tuesday, you think and converse on Wednesday, and then on Thursday, which is Thor's day, named for Thor, the Old Norse god, which is equivalent to the Roman god Jupiter. So in Spanish, that's Júpiter. Thursday is Jueves. So that's the day of expansion. So we take action on Tuesday, we communicate and exchange and engage on Wednesday, and Thursday we expand, we grow. And then Friday, Frigg, the Old Norse god, which is associated with the Roman goddess Venus, Viernes in Spanish, that is the senses. So it's a time to connect, maybe talk about what you've done during the week, share in your sensory experience of the week to those that you're close to, that you're in relationship with. And then Saturn day, you take everything that you've done on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you put it into work. You put it into reality, because that's Saturn, Saturn's reality. And then Sunday, you bask in the glory of the sun. You take in that energy, that vitality. Moon day, you rest with the emotions and the family.
So ideally, from what you're saying, the work week would start on Tuesday, end on Thursday, and then Saturday is sort of an in-between day, would be also a work day. So the days of rest would be Friday, Sunday, and Monday.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
So that would provide a lot more balance. Yes. Between work and rest.
Exactly. The way things are now, it's like you work Monday to Friday, and then probably on Saturday, and maybe a little bit on Sunday. You know, it's just like, it's all day, every day.
Right.
And you know, there's that other moniker, work hard, play hard. Like, I remember in my 20s, like, some of my friends, like, they work really hard during the week. And so on Friday and Saturday, they just go nuts, you know, right, partying and then recovering. And Monday, they say they're never going to do it again. But then by Friday, they're so amped up from their work week and pissed off or whatever that they need to blow off steam. It's all masculine energy, right, you know? Mm-hmm. It's all overtly, overly masculine energy.
Right. Absolutely.
No room for the feminine until you're completely broken because you're hungover. You just can't get out of bed.
Right.
That's the only, it's like no room for the feminine.
Well, that in that example, the only way to experience that feminine rest is to completely overdo it.
Yes.
To even overdo the experience of not working.
Yes.
Is the only way to access
exactly
that feminine nature.
That's it. Even overdo the experience of not working, mm-hmm, is, you know.
Yeah, I have to have so much fun that I literally can't get out of bed.
Yeah, exactly.
So that I can finally rest, which, yes, of course, is not really rest.
And then when you look around the world too, and you just see all the wars that occur, that again is like overtly masculine energy. Even when you see the feminist movement, there is an aggressiveness. That's mine too. That's not feminine.
It's not at all. Yeah.
And so hopefully this lunar eclipse is going to help integrate that tension so that we find balance between the masculine feminine energies within all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I am really holding that vision when I think about what what I see that we're missing the most on this planet is exactly the balance between those two dynamics.
Yes, exactly. That's it.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here. So there's only one more transit for the week.
Okay.
And that transit is occurring most strongly from Tuesday to Friday. So it's kind of lasting the whole week after the full moon lunar eclipse. And that is with Venus, the goddess of love and beauty, the planet of relationships, the planetary ruler of Libra, where the full moon is transiting through another sign where Venus is very powerful, the mutable water sign symbolized by the fish, where Venus is exalted, Pisces, forming a sextile, a supportive aspect to Uranus, the primordial sky god, the planet of revolution, rebellion, innovation, independence, and the unexpected, transiting through the fixed earth sign symbolized by the bull, Taurus, with an exact sextile happening on Thursday, March 28th. So this is happening from March 26th to the 29th, most strongly with the exact sextile on Thursday, the 28th. Thinking about the tension between the opposites and finding that balance here, Venus is the planetary ruler of Taurus, where Uranus is. Venus is exalted in Pisces, where Venus is transiting. The moon, full moon, is in Libra, which is also ruled by Venus. So there is a lot of feminine energy at work here this week. But there's also a strong balance between that and the masculine energy with the sun in Aries. Mercury is also in Aries. Chiron, the north node. The moon's transiting at the beginning of the week through Libra, which is an air sign, which is masculine. The air and fire signs are masculine. The earth and water signs are feminine. And guess what? There's six air and fire signs and six earth and water signs. So a perfect balance between masculine and feminine energies in the zodiac.
Imagine that.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah. Can't figure that one out.
Yeah. Wait, there's the equal number of masculine signs to feminine signs in the zodiac? Huh. Okay. Maybe there's something to us needing balance there. So how do we find that through these transits? And I just think of Venus in Pisces. It's really helping you find empathy for your partner, lover, friend, business partner, maybe sharing values, sharing your values, asking their values. That's the Taurus piece, which is ruled by Venus, but it's where Uranus is transiting through. Uranus transiting through Taurus is claiming our independence, our material independence. This is what I value. This is what's important to me. Through the release of the full moon, and this alignment between Venus and Uranus, it's opening up a window of opportunity for you to express your values to those that you're in relationship with, but to also be compassionate and empathetic in wanting to receive what your partner values, what's important to them. Through this exchange, that's where we find the balance. It's through empathy. What are your most masculine qualities? What are your most feminine qualities? Which masculine qualities would you like to develop more? Which feminine qualities would you like to develop more? Where do you need to find balance between masculine and feminine energies within your life? That's what we're looking for here. So maybe having that conversation with your partners.
I love that invitation. I know you've shared, maybe it was several episodes ago at this point, but that one of the ways that you look to safely express your masculine energy is sports. And that feels like a kind of socially approved place for you to sort of relate to that part of yourself. But correct me if I'm wrong, when you were sharing about this recently, there was sort of a feeling that it wasn't actually connecting you to masculine energy, that it was sort of a like a place for you to put it externally.
Right. Because you're not really being masculine by watching sports. You're being passive, you know, and you can sit there in the stands and scream and yell and that sort of stuff, but you're not in the game. You're watching the game. So you're actually in this sort of feminine position watching a masculine event. And I feel like that's why, like, football games, a lot of these football games, there's fights, people fighting, getting drunk in the stands and then mouthing off to each other and then fighting. It's like they can't be in the game, so they end up fighting each other in the stands. It's, I don't know. It's kind of a, it can be a brewing point for toxic masculinity because it's like this pent up energy.
Yeah, it's just interesting to notice. I appreciate how you pointed that out, how something about it feels displaced, even though the desire is to connect with masculine energy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but the irony is that it's actually feminine because you're in a fantasy. It's the Pisces energy. Like, sports are, on the field, sports are Aries. But in the stands or on TV, sports are Pisces. It's a fantasy. You don't really know what's going on there. You think you see what's happening, but you're not there. You're not in it. But just the fact that you brought up sports, it it brings up, because I had this other thought about like balance of masculine and feminine energy. There was a new coach that was hired for the Seattle Seahawks, which it was very interesting to me to hear the commentary that I had heard from his players. Like, sort of the common theme about this coach was he is the nicest, kindest, most genuine person. He really cares about his players. I'm like, he's got to be a Cancer. Sure enough, he's a Cancer. So you have this masculine man who's the coach of men, all these alpha males, whose son is in the most sensitive, nurturing, mothering sign. And his former players are like, we're really going to miss him because he cares about us so much. He's so genuine. Like, he was like their mother figure to these masculine men, you know, like they could probably cry on his shoulder a little bit. And he's like, they're there. That's okay. We're so you think about these alpha, like, masculine men needing that sensitivity.
Yes, of course.
We all need the balance. We all need the balance of masculine and feminine energy.
Absolutely. Well, and I think it's worth mentioning too, you said earth signs are the feminine, and we're living on a planet that's made predominantly of earth.
That's why it's, and water.
We know that earth, water, predominantly earth and water. We know that, of course, there are like volcanoes. That there is fire energy, and of course there's air. There's all of them, which is the point. But predominantly, you know, what we're living on, because people aren't living on water. We're living on earth.
But the earth is earth and water.
Yes.
And that's feminine. And that's why it's called Mother Earth.
Right.
And not Father Earth. It's Mother Earth.
Well, and that's why when you look at, I think we can track directly the relationship we have with the feminine and the way that the all of the ways that we're mistreating the earth. I think those are directly related to one another.
Right.
So part of what, you know, environmentalists really want to focus on sort of the tangible aspects of how to heal the earth.
There's the energetic, though.
But there's the energetic piece, too, that is really, they're mirroring one another. And until we work on the energetics, you know, we need to align the energetics with the action. We need both of them. We can't just do one or the other.
Well, think about it like this. We've just been talking about how there has been an imbalance of masculine energy in our society for God knows how many years, centuries. An imbalance of masculine energy on a feminine planet. That right there tells you why there are problems with the environment.
Right.
It's because when you are living constantly in that masculine frequency, but you're living on a feminine planet, it's like trying to breathe water. It's not going to work. You're going to drown.
Well, in the time when we are most in relationship with our feminine receptive selves, we're asleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not doing anything. It's like when COVID happened and they're like, oh, wow, look at this. The skies are clear. There's no pollution because everyone was in their home for 30 days.
Right.
That's how easy it was. 30 days of nobody moving around and all of a sudden pollution went away. So why don't we create more of a balance of that in our weekly life where we're not moving around so much, where we're spending more time at home and not working, not doing, resting, connecting, loving, nurturing. That in and of itself could be all the action that is required to make peace with the planet.
In order for that to happen, we would really have to change our relationship with money. So that's a conversation for another episode. But I just want to acknowledge that piece as a factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the planet of revolution is transiting through the sign that rules money.
If we could find a way to make healing the earth profitable, like if we could change our association with what wealth actually means, you know, that expression, health is wealth. Right now we have a very limited perspective of what wealth means. And to most of us, that just means what's in your bank account. But we know there are other kinds of wealth. And so we have to work towards prioritizing, recognizing other ways to experience wealth and then learn to prioritize them differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is very Uranus and
yes,
Taurus.
That's Uranus and Taurus right there. Hopefully by 2026, 27, when Taurus moves out into Gemini, we've had the revolution that we needed to have, and our relationship with money and the material has been, we've had the rebellion that we've needed to have with money and the material, and our relationship to that has been revolutionized.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing how that evolves.
Yes.
Because, of course, health too means mental health, which is my entire industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and therapists, we have to pay our rent just like everyone else.
Absolutely.
And so we end up having to charge sometimes more than we want to charge.
Right.
And it's a strain on our clients. It's a strain. If you're experiencing real mental health challenges, then it's probably difficult for you to hold down a job,
exactly,
for you to even be able to afford therapy.
Exactly.
So it's really this vicious cycle.
Yep.
It's been really difficult for me to see from my perspective. Like, I have a desire, you know, to work with people and support people, support my clients on the way forward. But I also have to charge a certain amount so that I can take care of myself enough to be able to afford to even work.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about, again, we live in this masculine society where who controls the society? The government, the corporations. These are masculine entities that are driving or allowing prices to be driven up, 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 up,
right,
and forcing the people into these uncomfortable situations. And so hopefully with this Pluto in Aquarius over the next 20 years, aside from September to mid-November this year, it's going to bring about the necessary revolutions or rebellions that are going to help rebalance the scales. And hopefully corporations and governments no longer have the power that they do, and that it's really the people, individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Individuals that have power.
Yes.
Separately from one another, with respect to each other and everyone.
Well, there have been some companies that have made their employees the actual shareholders of the company.
Totally.
This just happened with, was it, you know, the company Bob's Red Mill? Red Mill?
Mm-hmm.
I believe Bob, the owner, just died.
Mm.
But I think before he did that, he changed, or the structure of the company was such that the employees were all the owners of the company. And he made sure before he died that it would be able to continue on that way.
Yeah.
But that was also...
Well, it's like the guy who owns Patagonia also, he's written in his will that when he dies, Patagonia, I think he's already transferred it over into like a charitable trust.
Hmm.
That is going, all the money that they make is going to go to the environment because that's what he cares about.
Right.
So, you know, it's an outdoor company. So he's all about preserving the environment and protecting the environment.
Right.
So, yeah, there's nice stories like that. But ultimately, I think it's going to have to be where corporations just, you know, they don't have a right to choose. They're not a person.
Right.
They don't have a choice. They don't get to decide who's in positions of power in government. That shouldn't be how it is. It should just be normal people.
Right.
So we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. There's more to say about that.
Oh, yeah. We could go on and on. Yes. Yes. Should we answer some questions?
Let's do a couple questions.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Our first question comes from Mira J.
Hi, Mira J.
My sun is at 0 degrees in Aquarius, and I have 29 degrees Jupiter, Mercury, Venus, and Neptune in Capricorn. I'm a Gemini moon. It has been a major shift this year with Pluto moving into Aquarius. What does this year mean for me?
Thank you, Mira J, for the question. Thank you for listening. So, yeah, that's a lot. You have Aquarius, the sun in Aquarius at 0 degrees, Jupiter at 29 degrees, and then Mercury, Venus, and Neptune are also in Capricorn. It's been a major shift this year with Pluto. Okay, so it's going to continue to be a major shift. You know, what more can I say is, you know, you have to be open to the transformation that is occurring, the way that you're going to feel inside, maybe even the way that you look is going to transform between now and let's say 2025, 2026 even. Pluto is going to conjunct your Jupiter again between September 4th and November 18th. Is when Pluto's transiting through Capricorn. So that's going to transform your future outlook, your life's philosophy, the way that you view the world and authority potentially as well. But this is also with Pluto conjunct your sun. You're going through this very powerful transformation of how you identify. So be open to the shift. I think the more that you can be open and accepting of the transformations that are occurring in your life, the more that you will, the smoother the transformation will be.
So it sounds like you're suggesting surrender in the
midst. Yes, surrender. And if I'm, you didn't tell me when you were born, but I think that if I know when you were born, if the time that I'm thinking is correct, then you were born with the North Node in Libra, which means you really want to lean into that frequency. So that means the South Node is in Aries. Is Aries an energy that likes to surrender?
Not particularly.
Yeah, exactly. So it may be sort of contradictory to your nature to want to just sort of give in and not force your way to wherever it is you want to be. It might be important for you to ask for help.
Yes.
To accept help when it's offered to you. Those are some keys that I think could help you in the year ahead. So please let us know, Mira J, if this is helpful to you. Very grateful for you listening and for your question.
Best of luck in your transformation ahead.
Absolutely, yes.
Our next question comes from Annie. My sixth house is in both signs of Capricorn and Aquarius. How does Pluto in Aquarius change how my sixth house themes are being transformed, as opposed to the Capricorn approach I've had the last 15 years?
Thank you for your question, Annie. Thank you for listening. I think the difference is moving forward with Pluto continuing to transit through your sixth house, but now moving into Aquarius, it's about integrating the group to your daily routine. The first 15 years, or the last 15 years, the first 15 years that Pluto was transiting through your sixth house in Capricorn, it was about transforming your personal authority, your goals, your ambitions. What are you wanting to achieve, and how are you integrating those goals and ambitions into your daily life through even your health and diet? But now that Pluto transits into Aquarius, it's about integrating the group. Who is with you on your journey, and what is your responsibility within the group? What are you contributing to the group, and what is the group contributing to you? So really thinking about how you work or integrated within groups within your daily life. I would just finish up by saying, be open to the transformation that is occurring within the group dynamics in your daily life.
I wonder, too, if this is also about the health of the group.
Great point. Yeah, for sure.
The details, all of the inner workings of what make a group run smoothly.
Yes, yes.
Sort of a bringing sort of like a critical perspective to that. How can I improve the functioning of the group, the health of the group?
Absolutely. Yes. Love that reflection.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Gabriella.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
And thanks to all the listeners.
Yes. Thank
Appreciate
you so
you
much.
Being here.
Wishing you all the best in the week ahead, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Weekly Transit. If you're curious to learn how these transits or any others may be affecting you, or if you are interested in learning more about your astrological code, contact me for a reading at theweeklytransit.com. If you're interested in delving into the world of psychotherapy with Gabriella, you can connect with her at innervisionpsychotherapy.com. Music written by Ben Leinbach, from Listen Deep by Amber Herzog Lyman. This episode was produced by me, Scott Tajarian, wishing you all the best as you ride the planetary waves.